Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.
Awesome. So we are live, Coffee with Karen, a cup of positivity with just a sprinkling, or whereas more often than not, it's more like a few tablespoons of woo-woo these days. We seem to be transitioning further along and along and along. So each week, my guests tend to be coaches, other coaches, consultants, therapists, or healers. Whether they are helping people on a mental, a physical, or a spiritual perspective, and more often than not, they tend to be covering all three areas, which I think is what we all need these days. So your host, my name's Karen Roberts. What I tend to do these days is more help coaches, consultants, therapists, and healers create an online business and an online presence and build their business without being a salesy weirdo, I suppose. That's the way I describe it. So this week, my guest, well, Tina, if you'd like to share with the listeners a little bit about who you are, what you do, and share a bit of your story, please.
Yeah, so my name is Tina Neve, but I'm a personal growth and career coach, which for some might seem a bit of an odd combination, but I bring together skills and capabilities that bridge the sort of therapist coaching divide, so to speak. So and it's quite often in that personal growth space that you have to sort of dig amongst the past and actually sort of highlight some stuff that you may have buried, some stuff there that you didn't realize was buried, but there's also loads of buried treasure in there too. There's stuff about yourself that you don't really own, you don't really believe in, or you don't see, and that's where the growth starts.
Absolutely. So, brilliant. Yeah. And why do you think that is, that people, you know, quite often they don't realise what's going on? Is that to do with how we've been conditioned, to do with how the school system is and what we tend to do going into adulthood?
I think it's a number of things, and I think it starts quite young and sort of the education space too, because it's what we think is important that we sometimes strive for, and that isn't often who we really are. Sort of, I suppose it's a niche, if you call it, is midlife professionals. And that's quite often where you've developed over the years. I suppose it's conditioning to some extent, where you've done what you think you should do, ought to do, you know, follow paths in your career that you think are the right ones. And then you get to midlife and there's that sort of disconnect. Things don't feel quite right. You're not quite sure what it is. And it's often because there's part of you that you're not using.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I can relate to that. I mean, I know, you know, this story that, you know, I often joke that I've got a bit of a, I'm going for a bit of a midlife crisis myself. As in, I recently, well, it's actually my daughter's, but we recently bought a motorbike. And I never really got the midlife crisis thing. But for me personally, it was also a case of, oh my goodness, I can't believe I've, you know, we all still think we're 25.
Yeah.
And oh, before I do run out of, not run out of time, I'm only 50. I'm not going to die tomorrow. But certain things that I might have done that are, you know, when I was younger, and I think, well, I still want to do them before it does get too late. So is there, do you think there's, you know, maybe not buying motorbikes, but do you think there's that kind of viewpoint going in there as well, knowing that we've got to this age and right, if you know, we're not that we're running out of time, but maybe we should do something that we really are passionate doing before it is too late?
Because I think a lot of the time, especially within corporates, potentially, is that we keep putting things further down the track. It's like, I'll do that when, I'll do that when, I'll do that when. and when never actually comes, because there's always something else. There's kids, there's parents, there's staff. Oh, no, the kids have got A-levels. Oh, the kids have got this. Or actually there's, oh, no, my parents aren't very well. So you kick stuff down the road, and then you get to a certain point in time where that just, you go, actually, I really want to do that stuff.
And I
don't like the term midlife crisis. I think it's a rebalance. You have to rebalance yourself. What actually, who am I now? Because a lot of the things you've done over the years, you've changed, you've grown, but the old narratives you hold in your head about things should be or who you are, have actually, they're not relevant anymore. And we almost need to sort of reframe those and retell them so that we can actually sort of move forward.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. So for you, I mean, I know you come from a corporate background, yeah, but if you could share with the audience a little bit of your story and how you came to be doing what you do now.
Happy to. So, yeah, my pivot point was when I lost both my parents. I lost my dad in 2017 and my mum in 2018. And also part of my story is partly my mum. She lived with bipolar all her life. So after my dad passed away, they lived in a very small village. she came to live with me. There was no other way to do it, really. I just saw that was the next step. I didn't even consider any other options. And we hadn't had the easiest relationship because of her bipolar. And she came to live with me. And at that point, I was being stretched in all sorts of different directions. And shortly after she came to live with us, she collapsed at home after just what we thought was a cough or cold or chest infection. We thought we'd lost her on the bathroom floor, and we didn't. But we found out that she had a lung condition that she didn't know she had, we didn't know she had. And that happened in the April. And I hit the buffers emotionally and everything. And shortly after she was diagnosed, I basically left work with stress and then went back. And I took a decision to actually look after my mum.
Right.
And it's like, okay, I can't do everything. I've got to make a decision. Mm-hmm. And I decided that that's what I was going to do. Prior to that, I was thinking of doing something different so that I could actually have a more flexible role or doing something where I could spend more time at home rather than being in town 5 days a week, 4 days a week. Right. Obviously, the world's changed since then, but that's how it was then. So I basically, within a short period of time, mum was on 24-hour oxygen at home. I had carers in for her. She got to the point where she didn't want to go into hospital anymore. And I then dealt with the local hospice, and we had her at home right till the end. Right. And that was in October 2018. And at that point, at the beginning of 2019, it was like, well, for the first time in my entire working life, I had a blank sheet of paper in front of me. Never happened before. And it's like, well, what do I do? And for me, it was a very much, well, if I don't do this now, I never will do. But I'd actually had, funnily enough, the name of my company, Human Decisions, I'd actually already had that in my head when I had this embryonic idea of what can I do other than being employed so that I can spend some time home with mum. So that had already sitting in the background. So I decided that I would pull together my experience because the last role that I had, I was the head of an interim practice and executive search firm. So anyone who didn't know what they wanted to do normally got sent to me. So I'd effectively been a career coach
for
a number of years for people who weren't quite sure what to do next. Did they want to go back into a permanent role? Did they want to sort of go interim? Did they want to develop as a consultant themselves? And they were often in that midlife space.
The people right, that so you've I saw. Already started to see a pattern here.
I'd already started to see a pattern. And the pattern I saw was that so many people underappreciated their true capabilities or couldn't see them. And it was never the surface level that was the issue. It was the emotions and how they felt about themselves. That was the real thing going on. And the thing is, it's the emotions underneath and the relationship that we have with ourselves that is the most important. So I got some additional training as a career coach and counsellor, and I also embarked on a unique MSc in integrative counselling and coaching. So last year I finished the 2 years and I'm a registered integrative practitioner with the BACP, British Association of Counselling and Psychotherapy, and I'm part of their coaching division. And this year I'm doing my research project on perfectionism.
Oh, interesting. Perfectionism.
Yes. Yeah.
Something that a lot of people, you know, will think, especially when they come from maybe a corporate background into maybe doing something for themselves and turning into an entrepreneur or business owner or whatever, and see this a lot. They things can be quite slow for them because they're waiting for things to be perfect.
Yes.
Right?
Hands what? Up. I was there.
Why do you think this is? Where do you think this is coming from? And what can people do about this?
Well, funny enough, I was speaking in a group earlier today about this. And what I think is fascinating is that there isn't a perfect definition of perfectionism.
Love
there
that.
There are loads of broad definitions, and it's a combination of excessive high personal standards and overly critical self-evaluation. And the other thing that is a sort of recognized characteristic is to a tendency to engage in all or nothing thinking, whereby there's only total success or total failure. So there's some of the characteristics of perfectionism, which is really interesting. But I think what happens when you become an entrepreneur is that it's all about you. So you are your business as an entrepreneur. You're totally interconnected. And I know I've been on a huge personal growth journey over the last few years and when I started. And I think a number of entrepreneurs underestimate when they first start the fact that you have to bring your whole self into it. You know, my strap line is human decisions are when your head, heart and gut align. And quite often I think as when people start as entrepreneurs, they got the head stuff, but actually there's something in their gut that holds them back or their heart that holds them back and they're not truly aligned. And they do all the surface stuff to try and get things moving before they have that real belief in themselves. And that when the growth stuff comes, any stuff that's buried or that you've hidden, I think when you become an entrepreneur, all that stuff comes to the surface that you might have been able to hide a bit more in a corporate or an employed role, because it throws up so much when you become an entrepreneur. There's uncertainty, there's risk, you know, all sorts of stuff. And it can actually throw up so many internal triggers that you didn't know were buried in that space between the past and the present.
Oh, 100%. And isn't it, you know, different, obviously, I think personality types will probably suit. I mean, I have to say that what I personally would battle with is actually self-discipline. I used to think I was very disciplined, you know, and this I say this goes back to my sort of fitness side of things. You know, I was in the fitness industry, you know, since day dot, you know, as soon as I was an adult, really, for sort of 25, 27 years. And because I was teaching, being paid, basically, to turn up at a club at that time, and a club, obviously I did it. And I used to think, why don't people just go to the gym? And why don't people, you know, and I could never understand it until I stopped. I left the industry. Now, you'd think that I would still get myself to the gym. But because I lost the accountability of, number one, yes, of course, I was being paid. That's a big thing. But also, you know, you can't let, you know, if I don't turn up, there could be 50 people in a class that are going to be let down because I'm late. So I would turn up. All of a sudden, take that away and it's just me. Oh, I wasn't doing it. And it was a real shock to the system. Yeah. It was a real eye-opener for me. It's like, well, why am I? I've lost that accountability. Yeah. And and I see it the same with switching from being an employee to a business owner. All of a sudden, it's down to you.
Yeah.
And rather than, you know, you've got your boss or your manager, your line manager, telling you what to do, and you know what you need to do every day, and if you don't get it done, you know that you're going to be in trouble. You might not get paid, or worse. Yeah. Whereas all of a sudden, it's down to you, and then you can put things off and do that tomorrow.
Exactly. And the thing is, it's accountability, which I think is really important, but it's also a recognised framework that you operate within. And the thing is, when you start yourself, you have to create that framework yourself. And that's really hard because there's no one telling you to do it. And it's trying to find a framework that works for you. But we often try and replicate what we've done previously. And then it feels like work. And then you don't want to do it. I think so. It's a really sort of mind-blowing sort of
it is, isn't it?
Through completely.
And I think do you find that some people really excel in that space? Because, like, I mean, obviously with what's happened in the last few years, you know, some people have loved working from home, and other people obviously have hated it. And I can only relate it to, again, you know, how I feel. You know, I'm a people person. I like being out, you know, face to face, whereas having to do, you know, some people are just so, you know, and I admire them because I'm like, wow, you're just so self-disciplined to, like, be at your desk and be organized. And some people naturally flow into that, and others find it more challenging. So what do you think's going on there? Why do you think some do have challenges with that?
I think it all depends what our sort of drivers and our values and our strengths are. You know, there are people who've suffered a huge amount through the last 2 years because they want to be part of a team and they need that interconnectedness, and not just the formal interconnectedness, but what I call the informal sort of glue that keeps a team together, which is the chats by the coffee, before and after meetings, all that type of stuff. And when they lose that, they almost feel disconnected. They're not part of a team as much. So I think people who have found that difficult as well.
That makes sense. So again, depending on what your human needs are.
Yeah, what your human needs are.
Some people have different, you know, put different ones on a level of importance. So I haven't thought of it like that.
Some people don't need that. And they're like, oh, happy as Larry, you know, get up, do my work, leave it, whatever, you know, that actually suits them as well. So because we're all so different, you know, this whole hybrid working thing, it is going to take years to shake out because not all your employees are the same. They're all different. They have different drivers. They have different needs from work.
And do you think then, though, a lot of these companies have now realized that? Do you think that's the good thing that's going to come out of this, that they might recognize that we are all different, and so people, you know, like that, maybe you need to deal with them in this way, maybe you should deal with, you know, I mean I have I was speaking to somebody the other day about, you know, autistic people or people, yeah. you know, that might be on the spectrum.
Yeah.
They'll have that understanding now of, okay, this person you're going to deal with in this way. And yeah, if they yeah. are a bit short, it's that's how they deal with stuff and yeah. don't take offense. And do, so, I mean, I do definitely see that possibly, maybe, you know, depending, I suppose, with, within which corporate structure people it are is, in, yeah. that it's things are actually going to improve along
yes,
those lines.
Yes, I do. I think the other thing that's come up is that actually the wellbeing and mental wellbeing agenda within organisations is, you know, far more prominent than it was. You know, things weren't perfect before COVID in organisations by any stretch of the imagination. And this has just, you know, just thrown everything up in the air. And I think organisations now, and I think what's the difference is that employees are now expecting something different from their workplace than they were previously. They're expecting a bit more support. They're expecting a bit more understanding. And some organisations have really raised their game on this. And some haven't. So I think people are thinking of work in a completely different way. You know, guys have had a number of weeks, months at home and have taken the kids to school and have been involved in perhaps after school stuff that they would never have done previously. Yeah. And a lot of people are now going, do you know what? I don't want to give some of this stuff up. I still want to keep doing it.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so I think it's really shaken up what we think work should be,
right? Which has got to be a good thing.
I think it's a good thing. Yeah, but it's going to take. But it's going to take some while to shake out. We're still early days from this, you know.
Yeah,
completely.
So you help people going through that. So yes, I'm not going to call it. It's not a midlife crisis again. That's just a sort of name that's stuck, isn't it?
We call it.
But. You know, if somebody is sort of starting to, how do you start to work with these people? Is it where people have got to the stage and they're just starting to think, oh, maybe, or maybe they've got to coming back to work at the moment from what's gone on and thought, do I want to go back to that?
Exactly. Yeah. So there's just a rethink and it's like, but I want something else, but I don't know what it looks like or how I fit into it. So they might come to me through that route. They might. Of actually going, do you know what, I want a new job and I want to do something completely different, but I don't know how to navigate that and what have you. Some folk are just completely overwhelmed and it's like, I need to do something and I don't know what it is. So that, but generally people are feeling unbalanced, unhappy, and actually want more out of their working lives than they're getting at the moment.
Right.
And they're prepared to actually take some action and do something about it.
Right. So first of all, they've got to recognise that that's where they're at.
Yeah.
And so it's really once people have made that
okay,
they've got that understanding. Okay, something's got to change.
Yeah.
Might not know what it is, but something has got to change.
Yeah.
For me to feel whole, for me to be happy.
Yeah.
So I know you work with some corporate, but you obviously work with individuals as well.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
So even in the corporate world, what type of businesses are you looking to sort of connect with and work with?
Well, I'm currently, the work I do for corporates, which I do as an associate through another consultancy as well, as directly, and that can sometimes be in group environments when they want to support individuals through a change process. I had one client where everyone was going to effectively apply for different jobs. They weren't looking to lose anybody, but they're having a cultural change. So I did some group work around values and strengths. So people started to realise what they're really capable of and how they might fit into the new way of looking at things within the organisation. Through COVID, I did some outplacements, so supporting people who were going to exit a business. And also those that potentially needed support in improving their performance as well. Not from a performance management perspective, but from actually we've got someone who's really good, but we'd actually like them to be better and they want to be better. So sometimes it's actually taking high achievers and actually adding some bits in so that they can actually go even further.
Right. Okay, so it's just recognizing what that individual needs.
Yes, it is.
Where you know what you can do to take them to that next level.
Yeah.
And so obviously now with your whole sort of more holistic approach to coaching, how do you work with clients like that?
I nearly always start with something which sounds really simple, but it's a career timeline. So they have to put on one page how they've got from when they were young to where they are today. Highlight the achievements, the things that didn't go so well, areas of stress, areas of growth, areas of learning. And that always throws up, without fail, elements about themselves that they don't recognise, or patterns of behaviour they don't recognise in themselves. So that's bringing you, because you can't start to move forward until you've worked out to get where you are. That's my view anyway, because you don't know where your starting point is.
Right. Really? Yeah.
Until you how did you get where you are today? What have you been through? What's happened? You know.
It's all, you know, everyone talks about the goal, where do you want to be? But yeah, if you don't know where you are.
No.
That the route there could be completely different. Well,
exactly. Yeah.
We want to get to London. Well, where are we? Are we down the south coast, or are we in Scotland?
Exactly. Yeah.
You get it so wrong.
Yeah.
So I suppose it is. It's like, yeah, just not finding out where you are now, accepting where you are now.
And going through that with my sort of background, we do sometimes touch on the past. We sometimes touch on family stuff. We might start, you know, deal with some childhood stuff. You know, some stuff comes up around school. It could be bullying. It could be stress over exams and stuff like that. And how did that manifest? But it all forms part of that internal narrative you have about yourself.
Oh, absolutely. It could be one thing, one particular teacher said at one particular time. Yeah.
And then, although it's only one thing, it becomes magnified in our narrative, and it's something we go back to time and time again, you know, and that's when we get triggered in our adult life, within whether we're a business owner or whether we're in corporate, because something comes up that's the trigger.
Yeah, well, and that again, that makes a lot of sense, because otherwise why would you remember it?
Well, exactly. And I have one particular client, and she remembered something that she made a mistake when she was in her first role. And she felt, you know, it felt like the world was going to end because she made this mistake. But it almost become somewhere sort of interwoven in her narrative, this one event. And she was now at a director level. And I said, well, if you had someone that young in your team now and they made that mistake, how would you manage them? What would you say to them? And so I said, well, what would you say to your younger self?
There you go. Interesting, isn't it?
That completely reframed that particular event, and actually her internal narrative and her sort of career story has now changed. She's rewritten it so that that isn't such a huge piece.
Brilliant. Well, it just goes to show that sometimes all these things, all these stories that are going on inside our head, until we actually verbalize them.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Then you can actually look at it in the cold light of day and go, really? I've been doing that because of that? Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
It's quite fascinating that sometimes that can be all that's needed, all that's needed, and we can be carrying, because we haven't maybe spoken it out loud, it's just been going on in the background, I suppose.
Completely.
And then popping its head up when it's unwanted.
Yeah, and you don't know why you're reacting to certain situations. That's the thing. You just do, you know, it's a sort of, it's an unconscious reaction.
Totally. We were just having this conversation earlier about the, it just goes to show that, you know, I mean, I think we all realise that we, you know, the majority of our days pretty pretty much unconscious, even though we think we're thinking. Pretty much we're repeating the thoughts of the past. I mean, I was driving this morning and I remember getting to a point and thinking, I actually don't remember how I've got from there to there, because
I know
I've been, reliving something going on going on in my head. So I was doing it fully unconsciously. And when we realise, and we think that's okay, and when we realise the more time we can actually, if we can become a little bit more conscious in what we do sometimes, and certain, you know, it's all has its right points, I suppose. If everything's working perfectly, we can continue doing things unconsciously. But I'm sure a lot of us might. There might be some things that maybe we've picked up some bad habits along the way.
Well, exactly. But they're just patterns of behaviour that are sort of ingrained to some extent.
Yeah.
And they just happen and we don't question them until something happens and you go, well, I'm not feeling right. You know, my heart's not in it. You know, I know in my, you know, you've got that gut feeling that something's wrong and you can't sort of quite work it out. And that's when doing this type of work, I mean, it really, some of the early sessions, those themes actually get weaved into everything else.
Right.
So if you didn't start there, you'd miss out a whole important part of the work.
Oh, yeah, massive. That sounds massive. Good. What a brilliant way to do things.
Yeah.
And so for you, so you do work one-to-one, do you work in group? How do you work?
I do one-to-one. Mainly one-to-one. I don't have a group at the moment. We might have to have a chat at some point in the future, Karen.
Well, there you go. That's for another
but,
day.
Yeah, but... I love my one-to-one, and I do some group work within corporates. Yeah, so that's where I'm at the moment.
And do women, men, both?
Women and men. When I started out, I particularly positioned myself as dealing with women. And then I was at a networking event one day, and someone said to me, I know I've got a beard, but will you coach me as well? And I went, of course. And then a client's husband sort of came on and went, you know, I'd be interested in working with you. So, and the thing is, men go through the same stuff. But have to present to the world differently sometimes and can't be as open as we can sometimes because
Very
of cultural
true.
Expectations. So
very true. And we're probably more, because we chat and release a lot of emotion, maybe, not all, but quite often releasing a lot more emotion with our maybe rants with our friends a little bit more than the guys quite often are, so I suppose, are holding it in and maybe putting on a show, everything's fine.
And to be fair, I'd like to work with more men because I think it's needed as well. Because, you know, I think, you know, this is quite serious. I think, if I remember correctly, the highest cause of death under 45 is suicide. So there's something with where men 100%. Are talking.
And especially in the last, it's been tragic over the last two. And I would say, because of that, I would have thought, I'm not a professional there, but it would make sense to me that could be the reason why, is because some men can struggle a little bit more with opening up.
Yeah.
And so they're keeping it to themselves. So any guys out there, get in touch. It's good to talk, right? You know, let it all out. And it's funny, isn't it, that, we can, I mean, it makes sense that, you know, we have been somehow conditioned from school, we go to school, we're encouraged to do your A-levels, encouraged to go to university, we're encouraged that, you know, this is what you do, you go and get a really good job, you know, that's going to pay well, and then you're going to get a mortgage, and then you might get married, and, you know, all these things, like you say, that we feel that we should do, we ought to do, and people might feel a little bit stuck in what they're doing. Pure, and also because obviously the bills have got to get paid, right? Now they've got the mortgage. The bank want their money. So for people to change, do you think that's quite often the big fear?
I think there is a fear. And I think the fear comes from two things. I think fear comes from sometimes being in what I call the familiar zone for a long time. And the familiar isn't always comfortable. The familiar is, you know, your boss is going to be a shit or he's going to give you grief, but you know exactly when it's coming and it's become normal and you know how to handle it. Or, you know, you don't like your job, but you know you can get to the end of the week, you know you can have a few drinks and get through the weekend and you can start again. So we get caught in familiar patterns that aren't always comfortable. And I think it's hard to move from the familiar. And if you don't know exactly where you're going, if we use your sat-nav scenario, you know potentially where you are, but you don't know where the hell you're going, you can't map a route. And I think, therefore, the outside is uncertain. And actually, as humans, we crave comfort and familiarity. So actually going to somewhere that's uncertain and risky actually prompts fear, and therefore you'll avoid it. So a lot of people will put off making changes for quite a long time until circumstances force their hand. How many stories of people who've perhaps been made redundant or health issue has come up and taken them out of employment for a short period of time, and then they've ended up doing something completely different and gone, why didn't I do that 5 years ago?
Right.
You know?
Because it can, because it's almost like, I mean, again, sort of if I put it towards the, you know, the fitness or, you know, that kind of scenario, you know, people, they want to lose the weight. But also what needs to be done. So, you know, really they want to, people do want to just carry on as normal.
Yeah.
And for the end result to change. But we all know that's impossible. So they might want the outcome, but, oh, if that means I've got to, what, change my diet and I've got to go to the gym and I've got to do these. They don't want to do the thing.
Uncomfortable.
They don't want to do the change. And also it can, if we're a little bit confused, so even with the diet, oh, should I do that diet, this, that, confusion, overwhelm, nothing gets done.
Exactly. Right?
You know, I know that myself. Yeah. When I, you know, and sometimes when the, that seems like that's going to be really hard work, that's going to take a lot of energy, so actually I'd rather just carry on.
Yeah, exactly. And the perfectionism comes there in a bit, because some people get all sort of high motivated. I want to do this, that and the other, and I want to do it perfectly. So they do it for 3 days, and on the fourth day they fall off the wagon a bit, and they might eat something they shouldn't have done, or they don't go to the gym on the fourth day. And because it's not perfect, they'll stop. They won't go, oh, do you know what? That was just a bad day. I'll carry on tomorrow. You know?
Yes definitely.
And they try and do too much too soon, because changing habits takes time, and the best way to start is baby steps. But people sort of go in all gung-ho and try and do things perfectly and have high expectations first off. And then they don't meet them, and then they feel like rubbish, and then they stop.
And they're hard on themselves. We're so hard on ourselves.
Really hard on themselves. And then they judge themselves, and then, oh, I'm not good at anything anyway. And if they don't think they're good enough before they even start off, that just feeds all into that, I'm not good enough.
Which is why you need support, you know? Why do it by yourself? Why do it by yourself?
Yeah.
Because sometimes you need that somebody. Somebody like Tina to guide you through the process, or point you in the right direction, and put your mind at ease, and be there to give you a pat on the back if you're not going to give yourself a pat on the back.
And it's also to sort of, you know, just be beside someone as they go through the uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, so they're not alone through the uncomfortable.
Right. Because that's it. I suppose that's the message, isn't it? Because you're going to have to go through it. But I suppose when you've been made aware, like this is going to be uncomfortable, you are going to go through this phase, but it's okay, I'm here.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a lot less daunting, a lot less.
But there is something else you mentioned earlier, which I think when you do actually seek support from someone, it makes such a massive difference. It's when you actually articulate to somebody else how you're feeling or what the scenario is, because it's that process of actually getting it out of your mind and actually hearing yourself say it makes it real. And then you can actually process it in a different way.
Yeah. I suppose that's, can you do, you can, again, I suppose, you know, talking like that, it makes me realise that, yeah, because when you are unaware of it and it's auto.
Yeah.
So when you've sort of encouraged them to bring it up and actually be conscious looking at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would make it a lot easier.
Yeah.
Because you haven't avoided it. Right. Come on, let's face it. Oh, what is it? And again, it's the fear. It's fear, this whole, you know, some people call it false energy or false evidence appearing, whatever. Yeah. But yes, it's the fear of it is bigger than the, actually when you look at it and go, oh, right, it's just that.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody in the group I was talking to earlier today, and it was that also as we go through our lives, we forget that starting something new and learning something takes time. But we get to this point, and I don't know how it, you know, and it, we get to this point where, well, I'm going to do that and I'm going to be great at it from the beginning. And it's like, no one's ever going to be great at something from the beginning. And actually, you have to do stuff to get the feedback to improve.
Yes, it's the way we learn. Yes, it's
taking action.
And yes, I suppose that is it, isn't it? It's knowing that, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And then when you start to know what you don't know, might get a bit overwhelmed. Keep going.
Yeah.
Because don't worry, it will get easier. And the more we do, all of a sudden it seems a bit easier. And okay, I've got this now, but I've got to remember that and that and that. And then finally, it's autopilot.
Yeah.
And that's when you look back and you go, well, that was easy.
I know. Yeah.
And everybody wants to go from there to there in one leap, and they don't want to go through that middle, which is uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable. It's always uncomfortable.
When you're trying to remember all the, I've got to do that and that and that and that. Yeah. And it's our bodies, I suppose, always want to try and, bodies can be lazy, you know? They want to take the easy route. They want to conserve energy. Yeah. So anything that's going to take up more energy in the beginning, we subconsciously want to try and avoid it.
Yeah.
But when it is, it's funny, isn't it? The more we understand how we are and that it's okay, you know what? We're all the same.
Yeah.
Right? And if anybody says they're not, I'm going to suggest they're making up porkies because they are.
It doesn't matter how senior you go speaking to people, it's the same stuff that comes up.
Yeah.
Just because someone's more senior than you doesn't mean to say they've got this shit sorted out because they haven't. You know, this stuff.
We've all got a story, haven't we? And it doesn't matter. It's not a competition, is it?
No.
Who's got the worst?
And the thing is, it's like you were saying, a different way of saying what you've just said is that we realise there's certain parts of our thinking that are like underdeveloped muscles that we haven't utilised before. Like when you do go through like the career timeline and I just ask a few questions of clients, they start reflecting themselves. They start asking themselves questions out loud. And then they start through their own internal process with me just sitting there.
Which is perfect. That's what you want, isn't it?
Can reframe back to them and ask, take them a bit deeper and in different directions. But self-awareness, for me, is the foundation of a happier, more fulfilling life. The more you know about yourself, the more you can actually navigate the world around you. But we try and control the world around us first.
Yeah.
That's the default, I think, for a lot of people. Let's try and control everything around me, rather than actually being aware of what you can and can't control. But at the end of the day, the only thing you can control is how you respond to situations.
Well, there you go. I mean, don't you think that that's become more apparent? Maybe before COVID, we all thought, you know, we think we're in control of everything.
Yeah.
And the reality is we never were. It was
exactly. It's complete illusion most of the time.
It was a myth anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But now it's been made so apparent. Maybe for some, that's quite a scary place.
It is, yeah.
We want to be. But actually, you know, and I know this is something that I've learned more recently, as in I thought I'd understood it a long, you know, a long time ago. And I did really, just goes to show you have to hear things over and over and over to like all of a sudden, oh my goodness, now I get it. And that is that whole, again, because we're so conditioned to use our thinking part of the mind to control, right, I've got to remember to do this and this and this and write lists and tick off. And actually, it's when we do the no thinking, in a way, like stop the thinking, that we are do become more heart-centered and intuitively we come up with the things that we need to do, because our inner, whatever we want to call it, our higher self, our inner whatever, source energy, whatever, knows exactly what we need to do,
exactly,
what is best for us. But because we're all up here going, well, I should be doing this, and I should, well, you know, I can only get a job that's going to pay that because I've got to do this. We think we're in control. If we just zip it, go inward and listen to this intuitive, well, I mean, I don't know why we don't trust it, because our higher intelligence, thank goodness, is remembering to pump my heart and breathe my lungs.
Exactly.
But why do we not trust it more?
I know. What I really love is the fact that science is coming, is bringing sort of elements of ancient philosophy into the 21st century, because there is now science that shows that we've got neurons in our heart and neurons in our gut. And actually, our gut actually communicates more with our brain than our brain communicates with our gut. So when you have that gut-wrenching feeling, and actually, or, you know, your gut tells you that something's wrong, that is effectively another brain within your whole human self that is actually trying to communicate with you, which I just think is awesome that there's now sort of the science and philosophy sort of overlapping now that we're
coming
find
together.
Out more.
They get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So listen to your gut.
Exactly.
Every single time.
Yeah.
Again, so it's coming away from we thinking we're in, you know, we think we know all this stuff. No, you don't, actually.
Yeah.
Listen to your heart and listen to your gut.
And quite often the fear comes from your gut, is gut based. Security and fear often is gut based. Emotions more heart based, and then you've got your thinking brain, which is up here.
Interesting. So it is, it's, you know, fear. I mean, well, I suppose it wants to keep you safe. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't know what it doesn't know. So if you're striving to do something different, it doesn't know it's going to keep you being fearful of that. And again, I suppose once your clients understand that that's okay.
It is okay. Yeah.
That to like, you know, that's normal. We're going to feel uncomfortable. We're going to have those fear because that's natural, because this is new and we've been stuck in this same job for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, it doesn't know anything like that. So it's just going, oh, don't do that. Don't do that. Stay here. We know what we're doing here.
It's just trying to protect you, you know, and that's absolutely fine. But sometimes that protection mechanism just overcompensates.
Yeah. So it's stopping you from achieving the things that you want to achieve.
It is. Awesome. And what you were talking about education earlier, and sort of, you know, you must have a degree. You know, I don't agree with that. You know, there are different ways and routes into what you want to do with your life. You should be doing this, you should be doing that. The biggest chapter we miss out in education is learning about ourselves.
Oh, massively.
Learning about ourselves, hugely. Because if our emotional agility, I'm going to do a shout out here for Susan David's book, Emotional Agility. She's amazing. You know, if we were more emotional agile when we were younger, you know, it would make such a big difference as we go through life.
Right. I mean, I wish. I mean, half. Yeah. Oh, that could be a whole other show.
exactly. A whole other show on that one.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. That could be a whole other show, the whole system. My goodness, we could have a turnaround. So
exactly, yeah.
But for, you know, a lot of people, that's the way we've been taught, so that it is what it is.
It is what it is.
So for those, if people are maybe having a little bit of a gut feeling, there may be something, you know, maybe there's something that they've been wanting to express and haven't, or been a little bit scared to and not really known what the first steps and maybe just talk it through. So for, obviously, depending on if you're watching this on YouTube or the blog, you'll have all of Tina's info and links down below. However, just for the listeners, whether they're listening on the radio or the podcast, if anybody is, maybe I'd quite like to just maybe talk it through with somebody, how would they get in touch with you, Tina?
They get in touch with me, which is www.humandecisions.co.uk. which is my business, and I offer anyone who's interested a free half an hour.
Awesome.
Safe just place, be honest, just rock up and book. You can book through the website, just go straight through to the link, and we'll just have a discussion. And, you know, that might be the one conversation you need to trigger a process of you taking responsibility for change. And it might not be with me, and that's absolutely fine. You know, it might be with me. There are different ways I work, different budgets, different time lengths. I create stuff that works for the individual. But, you know, take advantage of an hour, half an hour. Take advantage of speaking to someone where you can just be completely honest. I'm not going to judge you. I'm not going to, you know, advise you either. This is if I work with people, it's a collaboration. I don't tell people what to do. So, you know, be honest, open, get a different independent perspective on where you are. And that might just give you one step in the direction that you want to go in.
Love that. And do you think that sometimes, again, we have been conditioned, for some people, it is difficult for them to actually reach out ask for help.
It is. And that's a really interesting one, because I think sometimes it's harder to do when you're in that corporate space. Since I've had more support, I think, and felt able to reach out to more people since I've been independent than I perhaps did when I was in a corporate environment. Which is really, really interesting.
Do you think that's linked to the perfectionism thing?
I think it's linked to being in a totally new space and not knowing, and knowing that I can't. The biggest thing for me was, the biggest aha, I think, of working as an entrepreneur is I can't do this on my own.
And it's okay to admit that.
And that's absolutely okay, because I'm not going to move from here unless I get some specialist input, because there's so much stuff in here I don't know and understand.
I mean, it's so funny, isn't it?
It is.
You know, when you look at a company, you know, a well-established company, you know, they have processes, strategies, whole procedure. Yeah. You know, they'll have a whole massive procedure file for starters. Yeah. They'll have spreadsheets and KPIs and this and that and the other. Everything done. And I don't know where it comes from that suddenly people feel that they're going to suddenly be an entrepreneur and they don't need any of that. And they're just going to, I don't know, just fly by the seat of their pants, some people, without anything. And then think that they have to do it.
It is really interesting, because that's where I was completely naive when I started. But I think sometimes that's a good thing, because you wouldn't have started if you overthought it.
We don't know what we don't know.
Exactly.
Of us are going to start in the same place. We don't know. I mean,
but the thing is, I started off wanting to do something from my heart. I knew what I wanted would make a huge difference to somebody's lives, and if I did it properly, I would have a successful business. So that was the way I stepped into my business. But I knew I needed, there were two points. One was, I can't do this on my own. Two was, this is an iterative process. I'm not going to have everything perfect that's going to stay static. So my website's in currently in a state of flux, and things are getting changed on a sort of iterative basis, you know? And I know at some point in the future that will change again. And actually, I'm okay with that. That's absolutely fine, because that's what happens, you know?
Absolutely. So you're never going to get it all perfect from the beginning. No. I hear you. You know, mine's still haven't done the copy for my main. It's not, you realise that's not the important thing.
No. You know,
it's funny, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And the third thing was, actually, we all have a sort of a bit of our own timeline. And for some people, they pick things up quickly and fly. Some people have to do some personal stuff before they can move forward. And that happens in corporate too. Sometimes you've got all the qualifications, but you can't move forward because you haven't done personal development stuff underneath that allows you to amplify that and use it. So, you know.
So you're really looking at every aspect here. So this is a real unique, holistic approach.
It is a holistic approach.
I think everybody needs, especially when they're coming out of, because it is such a major change.
It is,
unless you've got the head stuff, you've got the street, you've got everything in sync. And I mean, I know a coach I had many, it was before COVID, so I'm probably going back about 4 years now.
Yeah.
And I remember him saying, look, you're going to do your own, create your own thing. It's going to take you three times as long as you think it's going to take.
Yes.
And it's going to cost you three times as much. Not to put anybody off there.
No.
But he was bang on the, because it's also keeping it real, isn't it? Sometimes
it is.
People think that, oh, yeah, it's going to happen overnight, and then get discouraged. Just allow.
Yeah.
That it's, you know, for I
had someone who successfully set up on their own, and she said, it will evolve over a 5-year period.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's actually cool, dear. That's probably about right.
And cool. I'm in a place today where everything is sort of aligned that I wasn't in 2 years ago.
There you go. And so this is what it sounds like, what you shared with us today is that you are guiding people to find their alignment.
It is.
Is that
and actually, what... one of the things I get them to find is what I call their career DNA. And that is what makes you uniquely you. And the thing is, and I just love it when it happens, when someone realises that the stuff they do automatically and easy and that's amazing that they don't own, that other people don't have that and they don't think the way they do. It's one of these amazing aha moments when they go, but doesn't other people think like that or do stuff like this? And I go, no. They go, what do you mean? I said, well, they don't, because they're not you. They won't think like that. They won't
so
have
we
the same
again,
they
we
haven't got the same shirt.
Underestimating ourselves.
Underestimate ourselves. We highlight things that we can't do and we diminish the things we can do easily.
Isn't that crazy? It's crazy. It seems so backwards.
It does. But actually, when people realise what their career DNA is, it just opens up new opportunities, the way they look at the future, the way they look at their current job, the way they look at past decisions. It just all of a sudden puts life in technicolor that they couldn't see before.
Freeing.
It is completely freeing.
So if you're unhappy in your work, you don't have to be.
Just talk it through.
Yes. And there's no harm, nothing to be lost by just having a chat.
Exactly.
So can you repeat your website again, Tina?
Yes,
for any
www.humandecisions.co.uk.
Humandecisions.co.uk. It's worth having a chat, man. You spend the majority of your life in work, right? At the end of the day, you've got to be happy. I mean, I've always had that in my psyche. I've always gone for things that you know, I have, I suppose, tried to follow my bliss, do what I enjoy doing.
Exactly.
But awesome. It's been absolutely amazing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time today,
Tina. No problem.
Lovely to talk to you. Fantastic. And to the listeners, well, I As normal, I will be back next week with a Coffee with Karen. Bye for now.
Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.